Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's Handy Link. You're listening to Handy Link on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to Handy Link, sponsored by the Italian Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells.
Cam Wells here with
Jillian Parent.
She's going to be telling us about some of the causes she supports in relation to disability life. So, can you give me an overview of some of what you support?
I do try to support as many local charities as possible, whether it be the Cancer Society or Project Sunshine or the Sick Kids Foundation, which is very near and dear to my heart, along with the upcoming event, the Gutsy Walk.
So, for those who might not be as familiar with things like Project Sunshine, could you tell me a little about that?
Sure. There are foundations that support families of children with life-threatening illnesses or any kind of disabilities, and it's kind of a burden on the parents to pay for all of the costs that go along with traveling to the hospital and all the stays that they have to go through for their just to support their child. It's really hard, but it's a good charity.
So how did you get involved with so many organizations?
I got involved actually through the Miss Tecumseh pageant 7 years ago. I always said I'd never enter the pageant, but one of my friends was running it at the time, and she said, just come out and see what it's all about. You get volunteer experience, a lot of work with charities, get to know people and network, and I've been hooked ever since. So now that I'm going to be competing at Miss Galaxy at a national level, I try to get involved in as many volunteer events and foundations as possible, and that's what I strive to do.
So, for the Miss Galaxy pageant, mm-hmm. What message do you hope to send about the need for these causes to get some support going?
It is a big message that a lot of these families are struggling so much just to have that support for their children. So through these foundations, it's crucial that people get out there and get involved and donate as much as they can, because if you care for your child so much, then those families, they don't get to have as those many. Sometimes it's hard because you don't have those many. You don't get to have so many experiences with their children that children with disabilities don't get to. So that's what all of the money goes towards, is all those burdens for those families that are staying in the hospital, so that they can have those memories.
So, in terms of specific projects that you've done in your work, give me sort of a guided tour of some of what you've done.
Sure. Last year when I was Miss Tecumseh 2014, I had a big charity fundraiser for the Sick Kids Foundation, and I got all of the 2015 contestants involved, and we had a big fashion show. I actually had a little girl who was a patient at Sick Kids Hospital in Toronto come down, and she's near and dear to my heart. I used to babysit her. She was my junior Miss Tecumseh for the night, so all the money went towards the Sick Kids Foundation and towards helping her family through this experience as well.
So, how does the public typically respond when they know that someone involved in these pageants is sending a positive message in this way?
I think it really hits home because I'm a local beauty queen. If it was someone from across the country, it would still send that message, but I don't think it'd have that strong of a passionate impact. So when they see someone doing this, they come in support as well, because we're all connected in Tecumseh and Windsor Essex County. So we all know someone going through something like this. So when we have different events like that, everybody joins in. It's really positive.
So for the young person you made junior Miss Tecumseh, that really puts a human face on some of these issues.
Oh, absolutely, because you see commercials on TV and you just kind of pass by them, but when you get to see the people in person and hear their story, it's really powerful.
Sort of breaking down the difference between a statistic and someone with a real story.
Absolutely, because I really think that people don't understand the gravity of the situation until you hear it from someone firsthand.
So, in all the work you've done, have there been any challenges with supporting these causes?
Sometimes it is really hard because I do put on an annual fundraiser or multiple fundraisers, so sometimes people don't come to support as many as they could. It's expensive sometimes, but I mean, I get through it. I take what I can. I don't see it as a negative ever. I take every opportunity as it comes at me.
So, looking at the converse side of things, in your experience, what's been the greatest success moment?
I think becoming Miss Canada Galaxy was the biggest moment of my life. I'm getting the opportunity to represent Canada and spread that positive awareness for these foundations, not only on a national level, but on an international level. We get to connect with girls from across the world, and we all share what we're passionate about, so it's been amazing.
So what are the next immediate steps for you?
For the pageant?
Yes.
Well, I'm actually holding a comedy night on June 10th just to help raise money for the cost associated with going to this pageant, as well as donating a portion of the proceeds to a local charity of my choice. So I'm kind of preparing for that right now. After that, I work on my walk, on my interview skills, and appearances that I'm going to participate in throughout Windsor Essex County in the next couple months leading up to August.
So, if you could send any one message to the community about what needs to happen for all the causes out there, what would you say?
I would definitely say to keep an open mind, because some people are so closed off into one foundation that if somebody approaches them about a need that they have, they're kind of like, oh, I don't support that, I only do this. When we're all connected, Tecumseh especially is a one big family. So I'd say be open-minded, because someday somebody's going to come up to you and need your help, and that's just going to need to happen.
So how are you spreading the word about the work you're doing?
I do have, through pageants, I do get a lot of connections. I do a lot of social media work. I do a lot of the promotion through the events that I attend, the charity events. Word of mouth, I think, works the best. You just kind of go up to someone, talk about the title, talk about the things you do, and it graduates from there.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
Jillian went on to mention about an upcoming comedy event which will help support her in her work. It's going to be at the Comedy Corner on June 10th. It's going to be starting at 9 p.m. with doors opening at 8 p.m. Now, this is open to anyone 19 years of age or older. For more information, you can email jillian.parent@hotmail.com or call 519-890-5705. And on the subject of announcements, recent guests Nicole Daigneau and Lisa Saran ask that I pass along word about an upcoming assisted yoga class, which is going to include some demonstrating of techniques. It's going to be Saturday, June 25th. It's going to be from 12:30 to 1:30 p.m. To find out more, you can visit cocoyoga.ca. You know, folks, I think Jillian has exactly the right idea in terms of her work. It's not about finding just one cause and saying, oh, I do good for one group with disabilities in society, ain't I great? No. Her work has touched on many different groups. Project Sunshine, Cancer Society, just to name a couple. The fact is, she really is making a difference. People in the public eye should not simply rest on their laurels and do what a public face says will be good for their career. They shouldn't just write a check and arbitrarily go on their way. No, they should actually care about these causes. Because getting involved in disability life, saying, I'm going to be here for you and I want to make the difference, should have meaning. Our actions must match our ideals, folks. The truth of the matter is, it would be a very easy thing just to say, if I get to become this person or this position, then I'll support this cause. No. It's not about what you do once you're in a position of power. It's about what you hold firm to. If Jillian ends up with the title she seeks, then yes, that is a lot of recognition, a lot of glory. But I would say it's well deserved, simply because she didn't just get involved with these causes because it would be a booster for her. I get the sense they mean something to her. She's making a difference, but experiencing it for herself. The truth of the matter is, once you get involved in disability life, you'll find they have some fantastic stories, some incredible strength to share with the world. And the fact is, you sit down with any one of them for 5 minutes, you'll learn these are people, intelligent, vibrant, capable people. That's how it should be. I mean, just bringing a much-needed light to disability life. And for that, I am very grateful for the work she's doing. Yes, we all want to look good in the public eye. We all want to say, I support this or that, and I believe in equality. When it comes right down to it, we have to ask ourselves, what have I really taken to heart from this? How has this really affected me? Has being a part of this organization, providing some representation, really moved my heart? And those who are moved by what they see, they're the lucky ones, folks, because they experience the strength and the richness in disability life. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HANDILINK, the numeral 4, at gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Don't feel alone. The Distress Center provides free, anonymous and confidential, caring and emotional support, referrals, crisis intervention, and suicide prevention by specially trained volunteers. They're open from noon to midnight. Sometimes talking does help. So call 519-256-5000.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Jillian Parent, who's telling us about the wonderful causes that she's been a part of. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Roger Fordham, who started a program called Feeding Windsor, which will speak to the issues surrounding poverty and disability in our community. So what can you tell me about Feeding Windsor?
Well, it's a program that we started about 2 years ago and delivered. Last year we did about 15,000 meals, and this year we're on course to do more. We do a meal, a hot, nutritious, balanced meal, so that if it's someone's primary meal of the day, we've done a service to them. And it's delivered on Tuesday and Thursday at St. Andrew's Presbyterian Church downtown, and on Wednesdays at Ambassador Baptist Church on Manchester Road in the West End. And the reason we did that was instead of someone going to a central location receiving their meal, perhaps they partake in an area that's very comfortable and welcoming to them, and you know, they know the church, they meet people in their neighborhood, they see people in the supermarkets and in the bank, and it's just a more comfortable, welcoming way to deliver the meal.
So,
and go ahead.
So when you say that it could be their primary meal, so the issues such as malnutrition might come into play.
Well, for sure. Like, I catered to an area that's in the downtown core from the West End to Sable Goulard Road, and that is what has been deemed a food desert, and that means that people can't, there's not an easy, accessible, nutritious food available to the people in that area, and that it has a higher density of low-income people. So that's why I try to service that area. And it is a food desert, so, I mean, people are struggling with issues of food security in that area.
And when it comes to things like low income and the unavailability of things such as proper nutrition, that can have a serious health impact, wouldn't you say?
Well, for sure. I mean, it's a proven fact that the highest quartile of health problems in this country are in the lowest quartile of wage earners, because predominantly cheap food is laden with sodium and fat and, you know, not much fiber and so on. And so consequently, it's very conducive to health problems. And then there's the mental health component of it that you know, people dealing with poverty also tend to deal with isolation. And a lot of us as humans, we tend to have more than one issue going on in our life. So we may have an addiction, a disability, chronic pain, mental health issue, and lots of times there's concurrent issues that people deal with that they find themselves in where they are today.
So the isolation these people might otherwise experience, your program is helping to sort of reduce the suffering in this sense.
Well, it's true, because they come out, they enjoy a meal, they enjoy it in a very welcoming atmosphere. And as humans, we need to know we matter. We need to know we matter to people around us, that we matter to our neighborhood, that we're engaged, and that we matter to the community we choose to live in. And I think we do a lot in that sense, in the way we deliver the meal. And I think that's from what I hear from the people that use the meal, and we get about 100 people a night out to the meal, that's what they're telling me. You know, it's not just sitting in their home and having a sandwich, but actually going out and having a full meal and a dessert and a coffee and some laughs and talk to people around the table. And, you know, we find that when people spend time together, whether it's breaking bread or having a coffee or just spending time human to human, we tend to find our commonalities instead of our differences. And I think we do a good service that way.
So are there any challenges in coordinating the effort?
Well, of course, we don't have any core funding. We're sponsored by about 12, 15 churches in the area that help support us, several businesses, several organizations, but it's all day-to-day funding. We have a web page, Feeding Windsor, that people can go to, and they support us that way. But we run very grassroots. Our all-in costs to deliver the meal, fundraising, organization, everything, is about $2.50 a meal. So that's pretty frugal. And we like it that way. We want to be like that. We use infrastructure that's already in the community. And we're supported by last year's 6,500 volunteer hours of people that gave of their time and of their talents to help us do what we do.
So, to look at the converse side of things, in your time with Feeding Windsor, what's been the greatest success you've witnessed?
I'm very proud of what we do here. You know, it's humbling, and I bump into it time after time when I see people sitting at the table and things people say to me. It seems so simple. You know, we may not be the people that are going to change the world, but we can change our side of the street. And I think we approach it from that way. I mean, it's going to be, we need to change the systemic problems that create poverty and in this country, in the 13th largest economy in the world. But I think that's going to be solved by people much smarter than me. And in the meantime, this is what we can do.
So, what are the next steps for Feeding Windsor?
Well, we're looking at partners, community partners, to expand our nights. We would like to do more nights in another, you know, in a spread out in that corridor from Droulard Road to the West End. I don't do anything in the Droulard area because New Song Church has several food programs that they cater to that neighborhood, and they do it very successfully. So there's no sense going, you know, fighting with someone to be the person to give a meal. You know, they're being looked after, so I'd sooner use those resources in other areas, but staying in that corridor. So I'm constantly on the lookout for, you know, churches that might want or organizations that might want to partner and provide a meal on a consistent basis, on a weekly basis. You know, as our revenue grows and our support grows, that's what will happen. The other thing is possibly a food collaborative where, you know, people could actually have some ownership of their food supply, and that's something that's in the works also.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay, thank you.
Of course. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Ken Holliday from Northwest Scuba. So tell me a little bit about Northwest Scuba.
Northwest Scuba has been around for almost 35 years. Teach scuba diving to beginners, instructors, offer a lot of specialties. Also do retail sales for scuba equipment.
So can you tell me a little bit about working with scuba divers who have disabilities?
It's a little bit of a challenge sometimes. People with disabilities may not have the mobility. Worked with Daniel Ennett here from Edmonton, who has actually no arms and legs. He lost his arms and legs to meningitis when he was 5. So a bit of a challenge to get the equipment to fit properly and make them comfortable in the water.
So what sorts of modifications would you make in a case like that?
Well, we made sure that we had chest straps to make sure that the BCD, or buoyancy control device, which holds the tank on your back, doesn't slide off. So he has small stumps on his arms. So you just want to make sure that it fits nice and comfortable, doesn't move around on them.
Are there any challenges in working with a diver with a disability?
Making sure that they're comfortable, they don't get cold, again, because a lot of them don't have good mobility. Sometimes they get colder faster, so making sure that you're aware. Also, if they, say, paralyzed from the waist down, you don't want them rubbing on maybe the pool bottom. They could get sores on their legs or arms, or when you're in the ocean, or in a lake, rubbing on the rocks, making sure that they're comfortable, don't get any sore spots.
So, to look at the converse side of things, in your time working with disabled clients, has there been any success moment that stands out for you?
Well, my greatest experience I ever had was when I certified Daniel Ennett in last September. We took him to Florida, taking him diving around the coral reefs in the Florida Keys. And certified him with Disabled Divers International. It's my greatest experience. And then having the scallop hammerhead on our last dive swim with us was a great experience.
So if you could send any one message about the need to get divers with disabilities out there, what would you say?
Don't say no. Just, find a way to work with the people and make sure that they're comfortable and enjoy their experience.
So, are there any projects on the horizon for the diving school itself?
Well, I'm trying to get more people with disabilities to, try the diving experience, and showing that we can adapt so they're comfortable and diving.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yes.
Stories like that, folks, are what I live for. Hearing that things can be done, things can be made possible, that people are actually looking to new possibilities, using disability as the mother of invention, saying to themselves, this person doesn't have arms or legs, but they want to dive anyway. How do we do it? Once you start asking those questions and thinking outside the box, you come up with innovative solutions. You start to create. And from there, advancements really are born. Fact is, disability technology and adaptations don't just benefit people with disabilities. They tend to benefit the able-bodied community as well, who can look at it and say, gee, this might be easier, gee, this might be effective. Take, for example, the accessible button on a door. Yes, designed for people with disabilities, but for someone who has an armload of groceries and can't operate the handle, also a good thing to have. This is providing an incredible opportunity to someone. A person with a disability may have that initial shock, that initial reaction that says, my life is over because this has changed. I'll never be able to do the things I love again. But with enough determination, enough time, enough support, a person with a disability can find anything that can be done as an able-bodied person can be adapted for a person with a disability. I maintain that if we put our minds to it and eat our Wheaties, there's nothing we can't achieve or adapt for a person with a disability. Truth is, it really does begin with imagination, saying to ourselves, I believe this is possible. I believe we can do it. The fact is, engineers, people who work in technology, they see it as a challenge, something to create bigger and better. For a person with a disability, it's a question of, can I get out of bed in the morning? Fact is, it's not just simply a matter of design, create. It comes down to people, just like you and me, living in the community, living with hopes, dreams, goals. And these people have every right to do the things they love to do. And we as a society should really be encouraging this sort of advent. This sort of creation is not only unique, but it can change the course of a person's life. It can take them from a place of hopelessness where they say, this can't be achieved, this can't be done, to a place where things become possible. Humanity is all about that, you know, whether they have a disability or not. All about the next big leap forward, the next challenge. But when it comes to making progress, making things better, I maintain we must never rest on our laurels. Because you're not creating a better computer, a more accessible space, or in this case, a more accessible scuba opportunity. What you're really creating is equality and a chance for these people to thrive, to explore the things they love to do. Yeah, in a drawing board setting, it's a piece of technology. It is. But to a person living pain-free or with a little bit of mobility for the very first time, what does it mean? Freedom versus confinement. A chance to live as part of the community or to believe that there's nothing worth seeing or exploring for them in this world. And no one, anywhere, regardless of their condition, regardless of anything else, should ever have to live with hopelessness. That is the biggest disability that there is, besides prejudice, of course. Because if a person is hopeless and they don't believe there's anything for them, they start buying into all the myths and the illusions that a person with a disability can't achieve or they can't create, or that their life essentially has no meaning. No one, anywhere, ever should buy into this myth. Truth is, we all have something to give this world. And this story struck me as something so unique, but that should be more of a household possibility. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.